Hi, and welcome to Viva Politics Podcast, a podcast about the intersection of politics, media, and pop culture, hosted by a Generation Xer, veteran political consultant, Dr. Laura Barberena, that would be me, and...
And me, Lauren Coronado, the Viva Politics Office Millennial.
We are continuing our conversation with a good friend and incredible field organizer, Jen Longoria. And thanks again. If you missed the first half, please check our podcast and listen to the first half, because this is the second half in the continuation of our conversation.
Yeah, well, and we're seeing, you know, videoed certainly taking on new roles on campaigns where more and more today we're seeing campaigns or candidates rather announce their candidacy through videos.
Yes, yes.
Like that's their launching, right? I am announcing my candidacy and it's through a video. Right. Whereas before it would be like a party or campaign headquarters or even an email or a tweet.
Right.
Now you're seeing more and more people launch their campaigns with a video.
And I really appreciate it. I feel like it helps to set the narrative of who a candidate is when they announce, because at maybe a traditional rally or something, you're not getting that. You're not
really
getting the curated... This is my background. This is what I stand for. This is who I am, wrapped up nicely in a minute and 30 seconds.
Right. It's digestible. It's it's shareable.
Yes.
Yeah. That's key too, right? Yeah. Being able to share it, because once you get buy-in, you want to be able to get people to continue to send the message. Right.
Yep.
There's another thing in the academic literature that's come up that talks about sort of this peer pressure. And we've seen that when you knock on a door, and in order to what we call do GOTV, right, getting out the vote, that if you go to a door and you tell someone, oh, your neighbor has already voted.
Oh, yeah.
Or that someone, you know, someone at this such and such address has already voted, that it increases the likelihood of that person voting. Can you talk a little bit about that and maybe how you've used it in some of your campaigns?
Yeah. So everybody wants to be a part of a winning team. You know, nobody wants to be on the losing team. So, and I see this every cycle where people, you know, inevitably... our turnout numbers start to drop, or they're a little bit low, and you get, like clockwork, you get the Facebook messages. No one's voting. The it's so terrible. Our turnout rate is so terrible, but you should go vote. And I'm like, oh, almost, like so close. Like, the, you know, everybody wants to join in with their neighbors. Everybody, and nobody wants to be left out.
Right.
You know, we need to create voting FOMO. Like, we need to create
some serious voting FOMO.
Right. So one of the things that we've that literature has found to be effective is positive peer pressure. So if you're showing your neighborhood or your neighbor, you send a postcard and the postcard says, you know, out of everyone on your block, everyone with a check mark voted last election. And the first thing you're going to do is look for your address, see if there's a check mark. And then you're going to realize whether or not all of your neighbors can see that you have a check mark on your house.
Is that like the scarlet letter of I didn't vote last election and all my neighbors are going to know?
Yes. And it raises turnout by 2 to 3 percentage points. It's way more than you would.
Right.
So honestly, there is a little bit of backlash. Please stop tracking me.
Right.
That's a little...
How did you find out where I live and how I voted?
Oh, my God. It's all public. Remember phone books? Does anyone remember phone books? None of this is private. But it does increase turnout. So one of the things that precinct chairs are encouraged to do is to tell their neighbors, hey, I just talked to your neighbor here. One of the most basic lines is, my name is Jennifer. I'm your neighbor. Mm-hmm. I live in this neighborhood with you. Again, I'm not an outsider coming in.
Right.
So that peer pressure, we can use it in all sorts of ways on Facebook to be like, is everyone ready to go vote? Because we're all going to go vote.
Or a big trend on Instagram will be, and you see a lot of influencers do this, I just voted. I took a picture with my sticker.
Mm-hmm.
Post a picture of your sticker on and tag me in it and I'll repost it.
That's awesome. Yeah. See,
that was a big trend last in the midterms.
Good deal. Y'all keep doing that. I mean,
because the stickers are why you vote, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I vote.
For real. As an adult, you go in, you do something, you do a chore, you get a sticker. For real.
I love that.
That works.
So I also want to talk a little bit about, I know that I've done this when I go walking with a candidate, that it's like you could do all the training and then you walk with a candidate and it's different, right?
Yeah.
When the candidate knocks on the doors, it's different. Talk a little bit about how it's different and what makes it different, why people react differently when a candidate comes to their door.
you get a couple of different things when candidates come to the door. First, you get the like, oh my goodness, you're the candidate.
So yeah, you can like get a celebrity.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You're actually just, here.
Yes. So you can get a couple different reactions. And my favorite is, oh my goodness, you're the candidate. You are coming to knock on my door. That means I'm important to you. That knock is a golden knock. Mm. You know, there are things that candidates can do at the doors that even the best field organizer can't do. You know, there, I have had candidates say, I only go to the house, or I want to go to the houses with somebody else's sign because I can flip them. And I'm just thinking, oh God. And
oh, I've been walking with like, a candidate that did that too.
And they do. And they just, and I'm, it's never part of my, it's never a priority for me. I'm like, I don't know if that's the best use of your time, but they feel it in them and they can do it. And they talk with such passion about why they're the better choice. I mean, but that's the thing. When a candidate is making that ask for a vote, it's the most powerful thing. I've made calls with, Angelica Jimenez, Justice yep. Jimenez. Mm-hmm. And she was making calls. Her mother was making calls next to her. And that was the most powerful ask because that was like, my daughter's running to represent you. I'm running to represent you.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, because then you take out the middle person. You know, earlier when I said you have to connect your values and then we got to connect our values. Well, all they have to do is connect one-to-one. And, you know, if I, you know me, if you could have just the candidate just knock doors the whole time, right. I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I that's why I work in field, because I don't like to be at the parties. I don't like to be on the other side of the table. For me, it's like I need to get the candidate to as many random strangers mm-hmm. as I can in the next 6 months.
So field is often seen as one of the more expensive aspects of a campaign because you're having to pay people.
Because it is the most expensive.
You got to knock on doors. And we've seen increasingly the cost of workers kind of going up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, inflation's been going up, right? Mm-hmm. But it's been interesting because, and I always will tell clients, the client will be like, well, can we pay X amount? And it's like, well, but if you're out there fighting for, as a politician, for fair wages, yet on your campaign, you're not paying fair wages.
Yeah.
That looks a little bad, which I think one of the presidentials was actually
was kind of dealing with
that thing, right? Where it's like, yeah, I'm all about when I'm up at the rally stage giving my speech, I'm all about living wage. But then when it comes to my campaign workers and the very difficult work of doing the field, oh, yeah, we're just going to pay them $10-$12 an hour as opposed to
Not even $15. My first campaign, I paid them $5 an hour. Like, that was 30 years ago, sir. Right.
That was so long. And probably still not enough. Right. So it's still hot then.
But I've seen lately, we talked about how some of these workers are a little bit more professionalized. And I've seen a move lately where they're wanting to become even, because right now we pretty much on campaigns deal with them as contract labor, right? Mm-hmm. Where we give them basically their checks and then they're independent contractors and we 1099 them or whatever. But we've seen a move lately where they're asking to be employees of the campaign as opposed to contractors. And I wondered if you wanted to talk a little bit about that, because that does increase the cost for campaigns, not just in terms of the taxes, but now you're talking about having to have an accountant on board mm-hmm. and things of that. Can you just kind of give your perspective of how that would affect a campaign? And at what point, like, would there be some campaigns who just would never be able to compete in that market just because they don't mm-hmm. have the kind of fundraising that, say, a Senate campaign would, right?
Right. No, that's absolutely true. It is very expensive to make sure that you've got people out on the doors. And sometimes, and for a very long time, that was just something that wasn't done by a lot of campaigns in Texas because they just couldn't afford it. I am definitely in the camp that if you are advocating for fair pay wages, then you have to stand behind that and pay the wages.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just overall from a managerial standpoint, if people want to become part of your campaign and they want to be invested in that way, I feel like that can only help their buy-in. When I worked for Wendy, when I worked for Battleground, that was one of the things, like, we had organizers. And at the time, the organizer's main job was 100 doors a day, 100 calls a day, same time. And then they also did the volunteer management. So while we had the volunteer management piece on top of that, at the time we were like, oh, we don't do paid staff. But we did do paid canvassers. Those were our field organizers. And we utilized volunteers also. So I think it's just a change. I think we're just catching up, where that will become, as Texas becomes more of a battleground, as we end up having to fight out these battles. And quite honestly, now that we have more candidates running on both sides, when in the past we didn't, there'll be a market for people that want that as a job.
So here's a question. Have you ever had to fire a volunteer? Oh my goodness, that just seems awkward, right?
I had to de-escalate a volunteer once.
De-escalate?
Oh, de-escalate. Wow. There's even a term for it.
Okay. So this is, in volunteer management, you have a volunteer ladder, and you're always working volunteers up that ladder. You're giving them a little bit more responsibility every time they come so that they take ownership.
Right.
And eventually they become me, and I can go home and not do anything.
Right.
So, you know, you get to a place where, I've brought a volunteer up, and then they turned around and ended up this particular person ended up talking to the Express News about things that the candidate didn't agree with, and we had a conversation, and we have training for that. You have a tough conversations training.
Tough conversations training.
Yeah.
But it's hard because, you know, people are coming and they're volunteering, and, you know, you don't want to be unappreciative, and you certainly, you know, don't want to turn anyone away. But there sometimes can be volunteers that come in campaigns that can be agitators more than contributors. And, you know, they are difficult conversations to have. And it's certainly one that you don't want the candidate to have, right?
Right.
You know?
No, it's, that's a part of the management piece of it, you know, is volunteer management is hard work. It's dealing with people all day, people that seemingly all want the same things, but sometimes go at it differently. So you've got to find the right job for everyone. And sometimes it gets to a point where there's just not a job. There's just not something we can do. But we try not to let that happen. Campaigns are, especially Democratic campaigns, are really inclusive. And, you know, we try to find a spot.
Well, and it's also hard because, you know, volunteers come in all shapes, sizes, ages, you know, like, you know, one of my favorite things is when, you know, the candidates say, we need more volunteers. And it's like, okay, great. So you get in volunteers, and, you know, during the day, you're basically going to get seniors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of seniors don't have the physical capacity to go out in 110 degrees and go knocking on doors. And so it's, you know, there are limitations to what volunteers can do, not just because of their physical aspects, but also because of their education, their training.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can be difficult when that you don't have something for them to do.
When campaign expectations are not the same as...
But it's because of the media. Because people come... It's the busy headquarters. Look at all the volunteers doing things.
They want to make posters. I'm like, I don't have an event for you guys to make posters for. I'm sorry.
They want to like put stamps on envelopes. We want to mail something. And it's like, well, we have a mail house that does that.
Right.
We don't sit there and put stamps
not a
on
thing
things.
Anymore.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's part of why I'm an advocate for, you know, training those canvassers to be able to be equipped with maybe volunteer situations, because then it puts the organizer in the spot of like, yes, I have a block walk list for you electronically, because that's what you expect, because it's 2019.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have a paper one just in case you don't care if it's 2019. And I have a paper one for calling. And, you know, it puts this pressure on your organizer to have all of the options ready for the minute somebody walks in. And that's a tough job, you know, for any campaign.
Because
you do end up inevitably, and that's always been my nightmare. Somebody walks in and you're like, I don't have anything for you to do. Should be not right.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, you're just like,
or my favorite,
like, is, I do have something for you to do, but that's not the thing you want to do.
Yes.
Yes.
That's my favorite. When they come in, God, I'm here to volunteer. You're like, okay, great. And they say, but I don't want to block walk, and I don't want to make phone calls, and I don't want to go out. I don't want to do this, but I'm here to volunteer. And you're like, well, okay.
Like, and then you're like, okay, what does that look like for you?
Yeah.
What does it look like? like for you?
Oh, I'm going to use that question. That's a good one.
What does that look like for you? It so many people come in for different reasons, and sometimes you do have to take the time to figure out what their reason is. Sometimes their reason is like awesome and you're like, we can use this. And sometimes your reason is it's air conditioned in here.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to be a way to figure
it out. Or I want to gossip. There's a lot of gossipers.
Oh, I'm not good at that one. Like, I don't.
There's a lot of people who want to do that. They want to be in the weedy, as we say in Spanish, yeah. Right?
And then they came to help just like.
Yeah.
To get gossip. That's how they're helping.
I'm not very helpful for that. I always feel bad because I'm like, I don't know.
But we talked a little bit about technology earlier, and I was asking you sort of like looking ahead, but so you mentioned the van and technology, and you know, we tend to think like, oh, technology makes our lives easier, and then we're like screaming at our computers, ah, technology. But I know, like you mentioned, that most people are using their smartphones or iPads or something to block walk. How do you think that's helped the work that you do? In some ways, have you lost something in the process by adapting this kind of technology? And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, so in the old days, you would print lists of voters, and folks would have a clipboard with a piece of paper, and they would take that paper and clipboard, and they would go and knock on doors. Now, all that data is on a phone, mm-hmm. that then they can just push a button, and so that the data is immediately entered in the system, so you don't have to spend time then taking that paper and entering it into the database right on the back end. So talk a little bit about sort of like how it's been innovative and great and helpful, but has there been ways that maybe perhaps it hasn't been so helpful?
Sure. So I think for the most part, it's been helpful in so many ways, especially in Texas. We are so big, y'all. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all know, Texas is big.
We're talking big.
It's pretty big.
It's big. Yeah.
So on a statewide level, you're having to send out all of these volunteers to do the same thing. You want to stay organized. And if you can imagine, you know, anytime you volunteered, so let's just do it this way, simpler. If you send out, just bottom line, if you send out someone with a walk list on their phone at the end of their shift, they're done knocking all their doors, they've entered all their information in, they press confirm. That's it. They sync their data, it goes up into the cloud, and at that point, while yes, it's best practice for them to come back to the office and have a debrief, they don't have to. They could just head home. But if you've got paper, they now have all of this stuff they've written out, you've got a couple challenges. You have to read their handwriting. I was just in the office next door where they were trying to read sign-in sheets and they couldn't because they couldn't read the handwriting. And then you have to then take the time to enter that data in and make sure it's correct and get it done within a timely fashion. People always want to take a list with them home and then they bring it back ages later. What they don't understand sometimes is that if I give you a list out of our database and you bring it back after 30 days, I can't even use it anymore because now the data is so old, quote unquote,
right,
to the program that it's just not even feasible to use. It just flat out denies you access to enter it. So there are pros and cons, and we really do try to customize to each volunteer, but we're moving. And now the next step in technology is now distributive organizing, where before you would have to come to me, I would tell you, I want you to knock these specific doors. And we saw within the last election during 2018, Beto and all over Texas, even TDP was using distributive organizing, which is also using Minivan. It's using your app to mm-hmm. knock the doors. They used Polis, which is just a fancy dress for van.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is you tell it where you are, and then it gives you the 40 closest doors to wherever you are. So those are doors that I, as the field director or data manager, have already predetermined, but I just haven't put a boundary on it. You're just choosing where you want to do it. So if you wanted to do that in your neighborhood, that's fine. If you wanted to go to a neighborhood where you know they need the help, you could go there, hit your button, and it downloads a list of the closest doors for you. So that's what's been the next most helpful, because then that also saves the organizer the time of having to cut a turf and have that ready before they come in.
Yeah, it just seems extremely efficient that way too, right? So, and it allows people to sort of pick their comfort, right? So yes. It's like you can really, like if someone say they grew up in an area,
yes.
but they don't live there anymore, but they still like maybe they have friends that live in the area mm-hmm. or their parents' home is still there and they're familiar with the neighbors. And so they can use that. And it gives you the walker a little bit more, or the volunteer right. rather, a little bit more control over the areas that they want to walk.
Absolutely. And I still get to set which doors they go to and which they don't, but they get to, you know, have that freedom a little bit. So mm-hmm. it really makes a big difference. I think that's very cool. Not to mention it saves hours off of, you know, our end.
Who do you choose to target and how do you choose them?
So, a lot of times I'll work with the comms department, the communications department. I'll work with a candidate and then I'll work with whatever budget I have to say, okay, realistically, how many people do we need to talk to win? And how many people can we talk to with the amount of money we have? Mm-hmm. Once that happens and we get some sort of a round number, or not even a round number, just get a round to a number, then we start to look at what type of person we want to talk to. We start to use tools like the Voter Action Network, like voter rolls, voting history. So, I mean, just to be clear, no one can see who you voted for, but everyone can see whether you voted and then where you voted. So if you voted early, if you voted on day of, and those are things that we use to make decisions all the time.
And actually where you specifically voted at yes. which specific library.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Or school or whatever.
Or
courthouse or mall or whatever.
Mine's
yeah.
a mall.
And that's awfully convenient.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's Wonderland Mall. It's okay. The Mall of the
Mall of the Americas.
Yeah, that's not the Wonderland.
It used to be Wonderland. You're dating yourself.
Yeah, it's not a thing. Okay, so but we are able to kind of decide from there. You know, do we want people? You get to decide. Do you know? I'm running again. Say I'm a super popular candidate. I do not have an opponent coming up. Should I just save all my money and not run at all? Or do you get Jen in and then we try to expand your electorate so that we are helping all of the candidates in the area? Do we go in and spend that money to talk to people who are sporadic voters? Do we talk to people who have never voted before but are going to be especially invested this time because of their race or age or culture or whatever? You have an infinite amount of decisions to make, and it all depends on what race you're running, how you want to run it, and what your goal is. Sometimes the goal is to win an election against an opponent. Sometimes the goal is, I have no opponent, let's run a race to see if we can get turnout up mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it'll depend, and we go to a lot of different places for that information.
What's your absolute favorite thing about the work that you do? Like, what's the absolute, like, the thing that you're like, I just love doing this? Like, what is it, the actual targeting? Is it the training? What's the thing that sort of, like, gets you to get up in the morning when it comes to this kind of work? Is it the end product of getting someone elected? I mean, is it just the totality of it? Anything? I want to get, like, what is the specific thing that you really enjoy doing?
The specific thing, I think there are two things. But the most specific thing is I get to meet so many people. You know, if I'm doing my job right as a field person, then I am introducing my candidate. I'm introducing my organizers to random people all the time, every day. Mm-hmm. And so that's just so many people that you get to talk to. And a lot of times it's people who are coming to me to ask, how do I get involved? So they always have amazing stories. That part is awesome. The second part, and now I'm realizing, like, maybe this is it because I'm so excited. The second part is, you know, just creating those universes and digging through databases, collecting information that for good and not evil. Mm-hmm. It, you know, for me, it really is, you know, providing candidates and consultants and just volunteers and everyone I can with the most helpful information I can. You know, whether that's a sign-in sheet that I saved from last night's event, or whether it's, you know, some data that people threw away. Like, when I started, people would just use those phone sheets. They would make all the calls, and then they would put them in the corner of the room and never do anything with them. And I would, it made me cringe because I was like, we could be using that the next time too. Mm-hmm. But no, they would just end up making the same calls over again. So I think collecting that data, and that's the library in me coming out, like mm-hmm. a little bit like a collector wanting to keep things safe in a database for everyone to use, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a very big proponent of the Voter Action Network because TDP is kind of...
Texas Democratic Party.
Sorry. Texas Democratic Party is kind of the keeper of our house. They're, you know, if FAN is a... If that database is a house, then Texas Democratic Party is our landlord or our leasor. So everybody gets a different room, but... every candidate gets a different room as their section of a database. But in the end, we all get to go to the kitchen.
Right.
And we all get a little bit of the shared combined data that we've all been building and working towards over the last couple of years.
I've really been enjoying our conversation, and I want to kind of end it with this one last question. The work that you do has for so many years been such a male-dominated area of campaigning. Well, almost all aspects of campaigns really been male-dominated, but I do feel like field in particular has been such a male-dominated area of campaigns. What are some of the things as a woman, I mean, have you experienced any of the difficulties in terms of like sexism and other things? Or can you just talk a little bit about what it's like to be a woman in doing this work?
Yes, that part's a little harder for me to kind of pin down. I'm lucky that I've worked in Democratic circles. And so oftentimes I do work with very, you know, with it kind of guys that help. I don't think that I've had to deal with as much of the sexism as maybe you have with all of your experience. I tend to be very choosy with who I work with also. I've worked with a lot of women candidates. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was really important. There have been things that people have asked me, you know, can I use your work? Can I... Just things that they... Nice people have asked... Nice men have asked me that they wouldn't have asked another man. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't have asked another man to use your work, or you wouldn't have asked another person to cover for you when you weren't there, or... Just little things like that are hard. I understand that most of the people on our side are coming from a good spot.
Right.
And then also real talk, sometimes if someone is like that with me, I'm just blind to it.
Yeah.
I surround myself with, you know, great women here. Like, you know what I mean? I surround myself with women that are doing well in politics and I try to reach out to organizations. We just did a training with Latina Leadership, and I try to work with the most progressive women I can find anytime they're running. People always tell me, like, Jen, I didn't think you would help that person. I didn't know if they would win. And I was like, oh, I wasn't even thinking of that. I was just thinking they were the woman of color that needed the most help.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and that's where I end up, you know, usually. So I think... I tend to dodge it just by working with a lot of women on purpose. Mm-hmm. But with that, I am very conscious of bringing up other women whenever I can, of recommending, of mentoring, of showing them opportunities. You know, I just sent out a slew of invites to a data boot camp to a lot of women of color that I was like, hey, you once asked me a question about data. And now, like, you should know that if that's interesting to you, you should go to this boot camp. That, to me, is just how you do it.
Do you want to put a plug in for that boot camp right now?
Oh, it was a...
Is it too late to put
it?
Sorry.
It passed. Darn. But I will say, like, I mean, if you're interested in data, there are boot camps, there are... and they'll teach you everything from scratch. I mean, and right now we're seeing an uprising of... an uptick of... campaign schools for mm-hmm. for people of color that want to work right. in campaigns and be consultants or whatnot. So that's That is encouraging to me. Those are the things that show me that Texas is turning.
So if anybody wants to get a hold of you, is there an email that you could share so that if somebody says, wow, you know, I'm really interested in volunteering. I want to learn more of this. I want to be a librarian of politics. Where can people find you online?
What's your Instagram? What's your Twitter?
Yeah,
sure. Instagram and Twitter, it's just Jen Longoria, at Jen Longoria. So J-E-N-N Longoria. Plain person fashion. My email address is also jen.longoria@gmail. We're keeping it very down to earth.
But yeah, I like it.
I'm always up for people who are, you know, it's always that person at the end of the training that asks the question that you're like, yes, you should go do it. I mean, really just keep showing up, keep asking questions. Yes, we need you. If you're thinking, does a campaign really need my help? Yes, they need your help. But maybe call them ahead of time. So
make sure they get work ready for you.
Yes.
Well, I've really, really enjoyed our conversation. And I want to thank everyone for listening in.
So that wraps up this week's episode of Viva Politics Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Viva Politics Pod and then on Twitter at Viva Politics. And if you have a topic or idea you want us to talk about, send us a DM. I'll answer you.
This is Dr. Laura Barberena, your Generation Xer.
And I'm Lauren Coronado. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a new episode. We release new episodes every Monday. Bye.